The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
When the Facts Change is brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, in partnership with KiwiBank. The bank for Kiwi, looking to get ahead in business and in life. A bank that delivers expertise and banking know-how, smart advice for business owners wanting to invest, grow their business, or diversify. A bank that adapts with technology through the lens of its people and customers. It is a bank with heart that is driven by its purpose. Kiwi, making Kiwi better off. So what is money? Is it something that you use to buy a coffee? Is it something that you use to save some money, to put it away and then use it on another day? Is it something you can slice and dice and be confident that if you do put it away for another day, it's going to still be there and buy as much as you imagined you'd be able to buy with it in a year or two's time? Over time, we've sort of come to take money for granted, that it's something we just wave our phone at a terminal or a card at a terminal, or maybe we use a bit of cash and we take our cash out of our wallet and we use it to pay for a coffee or whatever it is. And to be honest, it doesn't feel like much is broken. Compared to some countries where getting cash or relying on the value of money is a tough thing. We've all heard of the stories of Zimbabwe and interwar Germany where people used to cart around wheelbarrows full of cash to buy loaves of bread. Interestingly, by the way, Zimbabwe has just changed to a gold-backed currency. But right now, our Reserve Bank, Te Matua Pūtea, is looking at changing what cash might be, or more importantly, having another version of cash, digital cash. In this week's When the Facts Change, I speak to Ian Woolford, who's in charge of money and cash at the Reserve Bank. Something we don't think about much, it's one of their roles, along with managing monetary policy and looking after the stability of the banking system, but it's really important and it's changing. Because unlike a few years ago, now there are other ways, other things that we could call money. Now we think of Bitcoin and Ethereum, these forms of digital money that in theory we could use to buy things instead of New Zealand dollars, either in a bank account or in cash form. Now at the moment it's actually quite hard to use it, and it's expensive and it's volatile, and to be frank, no one's using that type of digital cash, if you like, to do a lot of transactions. But in theory, it might happen. You know, let's say a Google or a Facebook or a Amazon decides to create their own money that you have confidence in, that you find it really easy to wave your phone about and get things done. And so our Reserve Bank, along with just about every other Reserve Bank in the world, is looking at how to create an official version of digital money so that we're not giving away the sovereignty, the power of being able to issue our own currency, or putting our fate in the hands of some mogul, some sort of Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg character. Instead, putting it in the hands of, let's say, a Reserve Bank, which is ultimately controlled by our democratic government and which hopefully keeps things stable and doesn't see money as a way to make a huge profit. So in this week's When the Facts Change, we look at what the Reserve Bank of New Zealand is doing to create a new version of digital cash, a digital currency. That means if, for example, a bridge went out, taking with it the telecommunications, the optic fiber, the water, the power, suddenly, as we saw in Wairoa during Cyclone Gabrielle, the usual ways that we see money, use money, suddenly disappear. It was fascinating to see during Gabrielle that there was a real problem because that bridge went out. The coffee cart, the supermarket, the dairy couldn't actually transact. If you were relying on your FPOS card or your PayWave or PayPass, you couldn't actually buy anything because, of course, the terminals couldn't coordinate with the central database. And also, with that road out, with those communications gone, even the old version of money wasn't available. Why? Because it relied on ATMs, which, of course, were connected to the central system. We find out from Ian Wolford how digital cash could be used during the likes of Cyclone Gabrielle so that an account in an app on your phone could be used to bump up against another phone or transact between one person and another without involving a bank. Now, these are exciting times and sort of scary in a way. And there are a bunch of people who worry that moving cash to digital cash will involve all sorts of privacy breaches and essentially take away something really important, the independence of cash. But that's not what the Reserve Bank say they're doing. They're going to create digital cash alongside traditional cash. It's also an opportunity to provide some extra tools for competition with the big banks to really give a turbo boost to open banking and create some extra tools for people to do really interesting financial services. That's this week on When the Facts Change. We find out what the new version of money might look like and how we develop it to try to stay independent. Well, welcome to When the Facts Change to Ian Wolford from the Reserve Bank, who's here to talk about digital cash, or what we would have called in the long distant past a central bank digital currency. Ian, lovely to have you on again.
Thanks, Bernard. Nice to be here.
The Reserve Bank has just launched a consultation on this issue of digital cash or digital currency. And I wanted to ask first, The document and the way that this has been framed and announced really does use the phrase digital cash a lot. What was the thinking on using digital cash instead of CBDC or digital currency or token or whatever you wanted to call it?
Yeah, I guess what we're trying to do, I mean, you know, the first thing to say is that this is a generally available form of CBDC, right? So a lot of central banks talk about wholesale CBDCs or retail CBDCs, and since we've been thinking about CBDCs, we've been more in the we want everyone to use it so they can access central bank money. And I suppose really the reason why we're calling it digital cash is to try and get away from the technical jargon, because this is going to be, you know, Reserve Bank money for anyone, all New Zealanders to use. And what we're also trying to convey, so it's to demystify it slightly and at the same time to say, look, it's just the same as cash. It has a lot of the similar features to cash. You know, it's fully backed by the government. It's issued by the Reserve Bank. You can use it in a similar way in that you hand someone a $10 note for mowing your lawn or whatever. You could do peer-to-peer with sort of digital cash we're talking about. You could use it when the internet's down or the power's out, like post-cyclone or even in rural areas or wherever, again, through that peer-to-peer functionality. So quite a lot of parallels with cash. And, you know, sometimes economists stray a little bit too much into jargon, so we just try to de-jargon it.
So digital cash, for those who are thinking, how is this different from normal cash? You know, I have the coins, I have the notes, or what I think of as cash or money, which is me pointing my phone or my credit card or debit card at one of those terminals. What's different?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're all forms of money, if you like, and we always say, well, there is a clear difference between private forms of money and public forms of money or central bank money. So central bank money is backed by the government. When you use your FPOS card with your money in your bank account. That is a digital form of money. That is true. But that money is really a claim on the financial institution that you bank with. So you're taking a credit risk. So there is that dimension to it.
So that's really interesting. So the thing I think of as money, I think of as the notes that have got a picture of some royalty and a signature from a Reserve Bank governor. And I think of that as backed by the Reserve Bank. But you're right, of course, the money that I might have in a bank, if there, heaven forbid, happened to be a problem with the bank, then I'd be a creditor along with other people. Does that mean that the digital cash issued by the Reserve Bank and the government is slightly safer and more valuable than the other type? And if there was some sort of drama, let's say, for example, you know, I'd heard from a mate or something that the bank or whoever that where I had my private money was in a bit of trouble, I could go, I'm going to quickly shift it into the Reserve Bank digital cash because that's the primo stuff.
Yeah, in a nutshell, yes. But I might just sort of unpack it a little bit in a sense. So, you know, you're right. One of the first things you said there was people don't really think about their money in their bank account as being somehow different from central bank money, but it is. There is a credit risk. And, you know, one of the things that I sort of point out is people become very, very rational in times of crisis, and they figure out, you know, the kind of the ground truth. So you might operate entirely in a digital ecosystem, right? Your salary might go into your bank account. You only ever use your FPOS or your phone or whatever to pay for it. You never touch cash. But what happens when you hear, as you say, a rumor about a financial institution? People go to the bank and they want to take cash out. Now, this is not just some sort of conceptual argument. You know, if you look at Northern Rock, deposits in Northern Rock were insured. People still went to the bank to take out money. We saw in New Zealand when Silicon Valley Bank got into trouble in the US, a bank that had virtually no links to New Zealand, certainly no links to retail banks at all, there was a spike in cash demand because some people, not very many, but some people went and took their life savings out of their banks in cash. And so people, I think, sort of intuitively, even if they don't explicitly understand it, they do intuitively understand the difference between private money and public money. The government stands behind it. There is a clear difference in the credit risk. Now, that's not to say that, you know, we don't have a well-capitalized, strong banking system. We're just making the point here that there is a difference in credit risk.
Yeah, it's interesting, and particularly at a time of crisis or maybe some sort of problem with the computer systems or a problem with the weather, as we saw during Cyclone Gabrielle, which taught us quite a bit about how our reliance on physical cash had shifted and now when one bridge was taken out, suddenly it became a little bit difficult to do what we like to do as humans, to consume and
drink water.
Drink water, that's right. Or most importantly, coffee. To be able to, you know, wave a card at something and suddenly it happens. Could you tell us about what the Reserve Bank learned from Cyclone Gabrielle and how that plays into the thinking about digital cash?
Well, on some levels, unfortunately, I'm not sure we learnt that much. And what I mean by that is, you know, for quite some time now, we've been saying that having a resilient cash system is essential. I mean, not only because people want it, even though they're not using cash as much. We know from our own research, most New Zealanders value the option to use cash when they want to be able to use it. Now, at the same time, what you've seen is an increasingly stretched private sector cash system. You know, banks' footprints are decreasing, ATMs decreasing, mm-hmm. and therefore you get a situation where a bridge comes out and there's fragility built into the system. And so we had to do quite a lot of work to, get cash into those regions, flown in and distributed safely. But what it did point out to everyone is the lack of resilience. It also pointed out and brought home very clearly the need for cash. But it also made the point that when we're thinking about digital cash, having the offline functionality or the ability to transact when the internet and the power's down through Bluetooth or near field or whatever technology we'll end up using when we issue the digital cash, that having that peer-to-peer offline functionality is incredibly important because it builds resilience, it's fast, it's instant. But more generally, I think it goes to this whole point about giving people choices, right? So in the grand scheme of things, particularly the Reserve Bank particularly minds whether people pay for a given transaction in cash by FPOS or by digital cash. We want people to have choice. And with that choice comes a degree of resilience and redundancy.
When the Facts Change is brought to you in partnership with KiwiBank to help you understand the issues affecting the economy. And that's what their team of experts is here to do too. Here's KiwiBank's chief economist, Jared Kerr, on what's happening with inflation in 2024.
Globally, inflation rose to really high levels. We saw inflation averaging over 10% last year. Now central banks have reacted. They've tightened monetary policy. They've lifted interest rates to levels where it hurts. We've seen growth slow down and we're seeing inflation coming off, which is great news because we import a lot of inflation from the rest of the world and that imported inflation is easing. So half the job that we're trying to do locally is being done for us offshore. The other half, the domestic bit, well, that's the tough bit. That's the sticky inflation that's coming out of our housing market. It's coming out of construction. It's coming out of service industries, and it's going to be hard to contain.
Visit kiwibank.co.nz to stay up to date with detailed economic analysis and forecasts from Jared and other KiwiBank experts. They take big issues from both here and overseas and make them relevant to Kiwi businesses.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
One of the things that's sort of interesting about digital cash is how it's delivered and who is the organisation you're using the digital cash through or where it's stored. What's the situation with the Reserve Bank itself? Does it get into the business of, you know, building apps and having a call centre and all of that? How are you going to make sure that it's controlled and that you don't end up becoming, you know, doing the sort of things that a bank does?
Yeah, so the sort of model that we're talking about is usually referred to as a two-tier model. And by that, what we mean is it's not a single-tier model. And a single-tier model would be doing the sorts of things you're talking about, where we'd be onboarding customers, you know, running call centers and the like. And that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is it's likely we will own and operate the platform, a bit like we own and operate payment systems, you know, the ESAS system, for example. But it will be that second tier that will do the distribution and the onboarding. Now, we make the point in our consultation that you won't need a bank account, but you will need some provider. So, you know, the banks are clearly the dominant financial institutions in the system, and so many people may access digital cash through the banks, but it may be through a fintech or it may be through some other financial intermediary. They'll be the ones that will be handling the onboarding and answering the calls and doing that sort of thing. One of the points of what we're trying to do here, I think, is to drive some innovation into the system and efficiency. You know, we're reasonably clear that we think there's been a lack of innovation by the banking system, and it's not as efficient as it could be. The banks are extraordinarily profitable. There are cheaper, faster, easier ways of transacting that you see in some other countries. So, you know, some people argue we're 15, 20 years behind on the open banking front. And what we're hoping a CBDC will do is will really drive some of that innovation, because we're putting a mark in the sand that just don't expect that this will be rolled out solely through the incumbents. We want to see innovation, and that innovation is not coming from the banks. And, you know, we're, like a lot in the fintech sector, a bit frustrated about the speed of open banking and the like. And we can directly influence that through, you know, who we deal with our central bank, digital currency, digital cash.
One of the questions or fears that some people talk about with digital cash or central bank digital currencies is that this is all part of a plan or some sort of strategy to actually get rid of actual cash, because actual cash, you know, particularly when it's in bundles, under beds, in holes in the ground, it can be part of the illegal economy. And that in the long run, the big plan is to get rid of actual cash and to be able to do away with it completely, which for all sorts of reasons, some people are a little bit worried about. What can you say about that?
Well, we're always at pains to stress that introducing digital cash has nothing to do with removing cash. We have no plans to remove cash. It is not a replacement. We want people to have choice. Now, the arguments around how cash is used, they're basically, you know, issues for law enforcement, right? Most people that use cash do not use it for illegal purposes. If there was no cash, people would be using other mechanisms to store value, whether it's digital cash, crypto, shekels, sheep, whatever. You know, it's a bit of a red herring, I think. We are at pains to stress this is not a replacement strategy for cash. We're investing a lot of time and effort in doing what we can to make the cash system more resilient. We're launched some cash trials around the country to work with communities to understand what communities need. So I don't know how many times we try and stress this, but it is something that people always react to. And in fact, when we did our first CBDC consultation 3 years ago, we set a Reserve Bank record for the number of submissions. You know, in the Prudential space, we might do a consultation and get 20 or 30 submissions. We got over 6,000 submissions on CBDCs. The bulk of the submissions we got on CBDCs were not about CBDCs. They were about, please do not use this to get rid of the cash system. And that is not what we're doing. We say it over and over.
Just on the issue of, you know, the future of currencies, you could argue, what is the problem to solve here? That, you know, we have a system that seems to work. Sure, it's not quite as cheap or as efficient as we'd like it to be. But compared to the, you know, the olden days when people were melting down coins and having to do quite extraordinary things to transact, people used to write their names and sign on a bits of paper called a check, I'm told. So what's the problem to solve here? Just sort of stepping back a bit.
I mean, I think one of the broader problems to solve is this issue of monetary sovereignty. And that's not just important for us. It's important for all central banks around the world. You know, the concept of a CBDC has been around for, well, close to 30 years now. And it wasn't really until Facebook started talking about Libra and then Diem that countries, big countries, started going, boy, you've got global scale fintechs potentially taking over the means of payment. You know, that raises significant issues for monetary sovereignty. And what we mean by monetary sovereignty is the ability to, you know, operate interest rates to suit the domestic New Zealand economy. You know, if you lose the ability to operate, you know, your own monetary policy, then you can get really big imbalances and problems in your economy. I mean, at the, you know, the worst case end of the spectrum, if people lose confidence in their national currency or it just simply isn't being used for whatever reason, you end up dollarizing or using another person's currency or some global fintech form of currency. And that's something that countries sovereign countries should be worried about.
And just finally, thinking about how fintechs could use a currency like this and whether you could see other people create stable coins off the back of this and in effect start to use it overseas or in their own way, saying something like, my Zuckerbuck is worth one official New Zealand or Kiwi dollar, the official type. Is that something that could happen?
I think it could happen. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, depending on how it happens, of course. I think one of the problems at the moment with the crypto space, and I know a lot of people have very strong views about, you know, regulation in this space, and I'm not talking here about the Bitcoins and the investment assets such as they are. I'm talking about the stable coins who are trying to become something that gets used as a means of transacting, and they, you know, they try and give confidence by having some form of collateral back to something. They haven't done that very well, and I think this is clearly an area, as we've said in a previous consultation, an area where some regulation could provide confidence in stable coins. A CBDC is an obvious way for a stablecoin to, you know, to collateralize in a relatively easy way. The other thing that regulation can do is provide actual confidence that the collateral is there when it needs to be there. And bank capital regulations have a lot to say about how you do that in a way which is robust and will be there when it needs to be there. But I think having a CBDC back into a stablecoin, my starting point is that that's a good thing, because one of the things we've talked about is innovation, and so that you have choice, you know, in what you're doing. Now that choice might be, you know, you pay, as I said before, you pay with cash for your cup of coffee or whatever, or you pay with digital cash. But it could also be that you want functionality in the way that you're paying. It could be a smart contract, for example. Now, the Reserve Bank isn't going to get into that, but this is where we talk about the facilitation and the innovation. We're not seeing that really from the banking system. Well, it will come eventually. You know, at what pace, I guess, is the question. You know, that innovation from fintechs backing into or stable coins used for particular purposes. I think the point here is that you need an internally coherent sort of ecosystem where the interoperability works, there's confidence in the various legs of it, you've got an appropriate level of regulation so that the innovation can be unleashed and the efficiencies can be unleashed and people have genuine choice.
Ian Wolford there, who is the Director of Money and Cash at Te Pūtea Matua, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. Ian, thank you very much for being on When the Facts Change.
You're welcome.
When the Facts Change was brought to you by the Spinoff Podcast Network, together with KiwiBank. Visit kiwibank.co.nz to find out how KiwiBank are making Kiwi better off.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.